Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Luright. Coming up, we're going to hear Florida this week from this past Friday night. And then later on in the program, we'll open up the phone lines and talk about some of the issues raised on the program and also some of the other news that's happened over the last 3 days. Well, last week I had some minor oral surgery, but I wasn't really able to talk well. So Channel 3 had my friend Ernest Hooper fill in for me on Florida This Week, which is a discussion about state and local politics. So we're going to hear Florida This Week, hosted by Ernest Hooper, coming up next. And then we'll open up the phone lines and get your comments. You can always call us at 813-239-9663. You can also email us here in the studio, the address dj@wmnf.org. Here is Florida This Week.
Coming up next, President Trump will be back in the spotlight when he speaks to the CPAC convention in Orlando. More complaints about favoritism and the way the governor distributed extra COVID-19 vaccines. And does the legislature need to fix Florida's voting system? Our guests are Darryl Paulson, Professor Emeritus from the University of South Florida, St. Petersburg, Jessica DeLeon from the Bradenton Herald, and Brad Ashwell with the statewide group, All Voting is Local. Next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. I'm Ernest Hooper, sitting in for Rob Luright. There were new revelations this week as those in charge of security testified before Congress about what they knew regarding the January 6th Capitol invasion. The acting Capitol Police Chief warned that militia groups want to blow up the landmark building. And the ex-Capitol Chief, who was in charge during the invasion, said the rioters came prepared for war.
I've been in policing for almost 30 years. The events I witnessed on January 6th was the worst attack on law enforcement and our democracy that I've seen in my entire career. I witnessed insurgents beating police officers with fists, pipes, sticks, bats, metal barricades, and flagpoles. These criminals came prepared for war.
That testimony comes just before former President Donald Trump prepares to step into the spotlight this weekend at the Conservative Political Action Convention in Orlando. Trump is widely reported to be preparing a speech where he again will falsely claim the election was stolen from him. Also this week, St. Petersburg Congressman Charlie Crist got involved in a controversy that's rocked Manatee County. Crist called for an investigation as to how 3,000 extra doses of the COVID-19 vaccine were handed out exclusively to people who live in two of the county's wealthiest zip codes. Governor Ron DeSantis has said the vaccines went to the areas with the highest concentration of seniors, and he did nothing wrong. We'll have more on that story in a moment. Meantime, the governor announced plans to put limits on voting. He's supporting a bill that will require more hurdles for mail-in ballots. And the Florida Supreme Court this week dealt a setback to Hillsborough transportation advocates. The High Court struck down the 1 cent transportation improvement tax. Known as All for Transportation, the tax was approved by voters in 2018 and included a list of projects that would be funded by the new dollars. The Supreme Court said that list illegally took away power from the Hillsborough County Commission to decide which projects to fund. Backers hope to put a new referendum on the ballot next year. U.S. Representative Charlie Crist is calling on the Department of Justice to investigate whether Governor Ron DeSantis violated federal law in reserving two Manatee County vaccination sites for two wealthy zip codes. The sites were set up last week with the assistance of Lakewood Ranch developer Rex Jensen and Manatee County Commission Chair Vanessa Baugh. Reporter Jessica DeLeon is a law enforcement reporter for the Bradenton Herald and has been covering this story. Jessica, thanks for joining us on Florida This Week.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So I wanted to start by asking, do you think the governor was deliberate in singling out these two specific wealthy zip codes, and now he's trying to cover his tracks?
I think it's very clear that the governor wanted to bring the vaccine site to this area, Lakewood Ranch, which is an area of gated communities. And these two specific zip codes were actually chosen, to my knowledge, by Commissioner Vanessa Ball. These two zip codes are among the wealthiest in our county. This all came about when Rex Jensen, Lakewood Ranch's developer, received a call from Pat Neal, another developer, and the governor happened to be on the line. He was asked about bringing in a vaccine site to his communities, and he was not comfortable with being part of the process as far as getting the word out and setting up these appointments. But the county already had a system in place, and so then he reached out to Vanessa Ball to help get these appointments set for this exclusive vaccine site. And she in turn directed the county's director of public safety and his staff to pull only residents who listed the two zip codes in question, 34202 and 34211, from the county's random vaccine pool, which had been created intentionally to be random.
So, Jessica, do you think this is just the media giving these elected officials a difficult time? Or are there really a lot of Manatee County residents who are upset about this issue?
No, this is not just us creating hype. Far from it. We've received more letters to the editor on this subject than we have on any subject in years. I myself have received countless emails and voicemails. The commission themselves have received countless emails. I'm sometimes copied on those emails, and people are angry. The governor claimed in when he came out to the site that he just wanted to bring this to a site where a lot of 65 plus and older folks live to get in and out and vaccinate as many people as possible in as quick amount of time as possible. If that were the case, he could have easily just given this 3,000 allotment to the county, who has proven was out here visiting that site just last month and touted how good of a job the county had did in setting up their drive-through.
So, Jessica, let me ask, I know you've done some reporting on this, and I understand you unearthed a really interesting email that Commissioner Ball had sent out.
Yes, this email went from Commissioner Ball to the county's director of public safety, the subject line of which was names for lists, names for vaccination requested. And then below that, she listed Rex Jensen, Jensen's father, two of her former neighbors whom support her politically and do business with her, and then Vanessa Ball herself.
So Vanessa Ball is facing a criminal complaint that's been filed by a Sarasota paralegal. How do you see this playing out for her?
Well, they're looking into it. The sheriff's office is investigating it to see if she misused her power as a public official to not only secure vaccines or to potentially secure vaccines for herself or others, which could be seen and would violate state statute of misusing her position of and power.
I know some people have called for her to resign. Do you see that as a possibility?
Definitely not. Vanessa Ball has made it clear she will not resign. There were dozens of protesters outside the county administration building on Tuesday where she made clear she will not resign. There was a motion made during the meeting for her to step down as chair or to be replaced as chair of the commission. That motion failed. But Vanessa Ball is not willingly stepping down.
Well, Jessica, it seems like this story is far from over. We really appreciate you joining us here on Florida This Week to share some insight. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you again for having me.
The organization All Voting is Local fights for access to the ballot for all voters, regardless of who they are. They have affiliates in several states across the U.S. who are facing proposed voting changes. Brad Ashwell is the Florida State Director and joins us now. Hi, Brad.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So, Brad, we have talked a lot about this proposed bill that's come out of the legislature in Tallahassee. Has there been any evidence of widespread voter fraud that would make this bill a necessity?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't heard anybody from the right or the left, any supervisors of elections, the people running our elections. I haven't heard anybody complain about fraud this past cycle.
So what do you think is driving the creation of this bill?
Well, I think one of the big landmark issues this past cycle was the degree of misinformation. There was a lot of misinformation coming from a lot of sources. Voters were bombarded by it. Part of that, one big piece of it, was this myth that the vote-by-mail system was rife with fraud and problematic. And that seems to – that myth, that notion that the – there are all these bad actors trying to manipulate the process and get extra votes, I think that's motivating a lot of this. I think legislative leaders, our governor, and others are trying to pander to that base who are misinformed, frankly. There's just no issue there.
So this bill has been proposed by Dennis Baxley out of Marion County. And does this bill have the chance to start out small and become something much bigger?
Definitely. I think what we saw with the governor's announcement last week is that they're working on a much larger bill, much more ambitious with a lot of different pieces. He's already outlined some of the general topics he wants to address, all in the name of election integrity. But the devil's going to be in the details, and nobody that I know of has seen that legislation yet. In terms of the groups we typically work with and supervisors of elections we've spoken to, so we're all poised and ready to see it. We're waiting on pins and needles.
So. The Supervisors of Election Association was not consulted in the crafting of this bill, which is usually a tradition in Tallahassee, and they are actually opposed to it. What does that say about this bill, Brad?
Well, it just really makes one question where it's coming from. If they're not consulting with the people who are running our elections or really generously taking their feedback when they propose amendments, where is this really coming from and what's the real motives behind it? The other undeniable factor, it's hard to talk about this without getting political. We're a nonpartisan organization, but sometimes you have to call a duck a duck. And in this case, if you look at the numbers, vote by mail was a little different this cycle. Typically, Republicans way outpace Democrats in the use of vote by mail ballots. This cycle was a little different. One interpretation of this bill that I tend to agree with is that the powers that be in the legislature are trying to kind of level the playing field in their favor, or put their fingers on the scale and eliminate any advantage the Democrats might have gained last election cycle in registering a really significant number of vote by mail applications.
Yeah.
Which typically lasts for two election cycles. So one of the big negative parts of the bill is that it would wipe out all those applications that were made last year, and it would it would be a reset button. We just start from zero, and I think they believe they can outpace the Democrats.
All right. Well, Brad, we appreciate you joining us. Good luck as you continue to advocate for voters with All Voting is Local. Thank you.
Thank you.
There is a long history in Florida of lawmakers making it more difficult for citizens to vote. That includes discrimination against black voters. Darryl Paulson is the Emeritus Professor of Government at the University of South Florida, St. Petersburg, and has written extensively over the years about this subject. Darryl, welcome back to Florida This Week.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Ernest.
It's good to see you. So in light of the CPAC convention this weekend in Orlando, I want to read some numbers from a new USA Today Suffolk poll about the Republican Party. More Trump voters are loyal to Donald Trump than they are to the party, 54%. Even though he would be 78 years old in 2024, a big majority want him to run for president again, 59%. And 58% believe in the conspiracy theory that says it was not Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol on January 6th. Daryl, what does that say about the Republican base? Is there a danger to our country from holding these beliefs?
Well, there's always a danger when people uncouple themselves from political reality. Other things in that poll that you didn't mention, 75% of Trump supporters do not think Joe Biden is a legitimate president, even though he won by more than 7 million votes. Their response to that is simply to continue to deny that based on everything that Trump has said about election fraud, which he alleged took place. And so they're buying into this. And they also say in that poll they support Trump because Trump is a different kind of Republican. As they said in the poll, Trump fights for us. The Republican establishment doesn't. In fact, they compared the Republican establishment to the Democratic establishment, saying there was no difference between the two. It's sort of like the old Tweedledum, Tweedledee theory of politics. There's not a dime's worth of difference between the party. And that's the way many Trump supporters see it. So a lot of his support is drawn from these disaffected individuals who want something different. And boy, did they get that.
Yeah. So I want to play a soundbite. This is a warning from the third highest ranking Republican in Congress, Liz Cheney. She is not a Trump fan. This is a warning she made this week about the GOP.
It's very important, especially for us as Republicans, to make clear that we aren't the party of white supremacy. You certainly saw anti-Semitism. You saw the symbols of Holocaust denial, for example, at the Capitol that day. You saw a Confederate flag being carried through the rotunda. And I think we as Republicans in particular have a duty and an obligation to stand against that.
So, Daryl, is the party moving toward being the party of white supremacists and insurrectionists?
Well, they are, both by their words and by their deeds. And in a moment, we'll talk about election laws and specifically what Florida is doing with respect to election laws. And a lot of those changes are quite honestly designed at black voter suppression to make it more difficult for blacks to participate in the election process, because one of the things that we've seen in the last several election cycles is that black voters have turned out at a higher rate than white voters, and in particular with respect to mail-in voting. Blacks have taken over in terms of being the majority of vote-by-mail individuals. And it used to be this was an area that Republicans completely dominated. And then along comes President Trump, and he tells people to vote at the polls. You know, there's too much fraud going on. Vote-by-mail is nothing more than fraud. And what he did was to discourage many of his own supporters from, you know, engaging in what the Republican Party had dominated. And so now Democrats have this complete domination of the vote by mail. And in Florida right now, just one example, there's over 800,000 more Democrats who have requested vote by mail for 2022 than Republicans. That's a huge advantage. And of course, Ron DeSantis is going to be in that particular election, and he's the one who supports this, making it more difficult to vote by mail. And it's hard to see that as nothing more than an attempt to suppress Democratic voters, many of whom are African-American voters.
Daryl, what kind of comparisons would you draw between the bill that's being proposed right now and what we've seen historically in Florida?
Yeah. Well, Florida has had a long history of discriminating against African Americans. In fact, it's almost a 200-year history of voter discrimination against African Americans. And for much of Florida's history, it's been the Democrats who led that discrimination. Quite honestly, from the end of Reconstruction, about 1870 in Florida, until the 1990s, a period of 120 years, Democrats dominated Florida politics, and they put into effect most of the worst voting discrimination barriers the state has ever seen. The white primary, the poll tax, literacy test, grandfather clauses, eight ballot box law, which Florida alone uniquely created against its African-American citizens. So there's a long history of discrimination by the Democrats, but Republicans had the opportunity when they took over in the 1990s and have dominated Florida for the past 30 years to change things, to once again become the party of Lincoln, to connect with its roots on protecting and preserving African-American voters. And instead, what they've done is to continue that process of voter discrimination, but they've just moved in different directions. And they've done it by voter purges and by trying to cut back at vote-by-mail efforts. And, of course, this whole issue of the felon vote, where Florida has a terrible legacy. You know, one quarter of all individuals who are denied the right to vote in the United States because of the felon vote issue reside in the state of Florida. Anytime you have one quarter of the entire nation being based in Florida and denied the right to vote because they have a felony conviction, primarily for the fact that Florida makes more things felony than any other state, you know that's not a sign of progress. That's a sign of voter discrimination. That's a sign of vote suppression. And it's not a good thing for Florida to be proud of.
Yeah. So, Darryl, what do you see happening with the GOP party, particularly in terms of those who want to bring the party back to being the party of Lincoln, who are closer to the center? What happens to people like Liz Cheney?
Yeah. Well, the options are not good. You've already seen Kevin McCarthy, who supported Liz Cheney after she came out and said that she would vote to impeach the president. She was one of about 20 House members that did so. He sort of backed away from his endorsement of her. You've now more recently seen Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, also backing away and saying that if Trump were the Republican nominee in 2024, he'd support Trump in that position. And so there's a lot of fear of Trump and his power. And so the difficulty for the Republicans who want to disassociate themselves from President Trump is that the Trump supporters control most of the party machinery. They're in the positions of power in each of the 50 states to take full control. And you've seen what happened to the individuals who have not sided with Trump. You know, they've already been chastised by party officials for their actions. And it's going to make it very difficult for them to put together a significant following. So one of two possibilities, either Trump factions dominate the Republican Party, or somehow the anti-Trump forces do. And right now you'd have to say the money is on the Trump forces, just given their complete tactical advantage, so to speak, within the Republican Party at this point in time. It's very difficult to run an insurgent campaign when you, in fact, are supposed to be the people running the party and you see somebody else completely taking over the party and dominating it. The one thing that might intervene that could affect this, of course, is all of the legal suits that are in process against Donald Trump, whether it's his income tax issue in New York State or some of the other issues about trying to change the vote in the state of Georgia and apply illegal pressure on the voting officials in that state. You know, if Trump is found guilty of some of those violations, that in itself may resolve the issue as to whether or not Trump will be a viable presidential candidate in 4 years. But right now, you know, the Trumpites say clearly if Trump runs in 4 years, we'll back him. And in fact, 85% of Trump supporters said they want him to run and they would back him in 2024.
So, Darryl, in the last minute we have, what can the Democrat Party and others who feel like voters are going to be suppressed by this new bill, what can they do to counter that?
Well, historically, the avenue for African Americans and to a great extent, the Democratic Party has used the courts. I mean, the courts have been the most friendly institution towards African Americans. Primarily in the past, it was the NAACP. But now you're seeing this attempt to suppress early voting, to make it that you no longer, if you request early voting, it doesn't apply to two elections like it did in the past. But the new law says it will only apply to one election. And all of these are designed to suppress the black vote because they see the trend lines. They see how the Democrats have used this to their advantage. They saw what happened in Georgia. The two Democrats won in Georgia, the Senate races primarily, because of the huge black turnout in vote by mail in that state. And they don't want it to happen in the state of Florida.
Right. All right. Darryl Paulson, USF St. Petersburg Emeritus Professor. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Good to see you, Ernest. Always a pleasure.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And Ernest Hooper was filling in for me and my, or the guest on the program, Brad Ashwell from the group All Voting is Local, and Jessica DeLeon, a reporter at the Bradenton Herald, and Dr. Gerald Paulson, a professor emeritus from USF St. Petersburg. Discussion with Jessica DeLeon of the Sarasota Herald Tribune was about these pop-up sites for vaccine distribution in Manatee County. And there's some news on that I want to tell you about. Florida Commissioner of Agriculture sent out a press release this morning calling for a congressional vaccine investigation and the suspension of the Manatee County Commissioner, Vanessa Baugh, who helped to organize the pop-up locations in Manatee County. And I'll just read you what part of the letter that Nikki Fried sent out calling for this congressional investigation. She wrote to James Clyburn, the ranking member of the Congressional Investigation Commission. This is what she wrote. Earlier this month, a pop-up vaccine distribution occurred in two affluent zip codes after DeSantis quietly contacted a campaign donor, a real estate developer whose company built Lakewood Ranch, a mostly Republican, mainly white master plan community in Manatee County. The distribution included a VIP list for vaccine access arranged by a local official and political ally of Governor DeSantis, now under investigation for potential abuse of power. Since then, additional incidents have been uncovered. A pop-up vaccination at an upscale community occurred in Sarasota County, tied to a real estate developer who gave $25,000 to the governor's political committee and served on his transition team, and who said that he was contacted by DeSantis to help. An additional Charlotte County pop-up vaccine distribution occurred in a gated country club community where some homes are priced at more than $1 million, tied to the same developer. And again, I'm reading from a letter that Florida's Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried sent out this morning calling for a congressional investigation into vaccine distribution here on the southwest part of Florida. Fried goes on to write, "Given the numerous serious questions regarding the governor's impartiality and potential political corruption in distributing life-saving vaccines, I encourage your committee to initiate a congressional inquiry into Florida's vaccine distribution procedures, including compelling the production of any testimony, records, and documents as you see fit." So that letter was sent out by our agriculture commissioner to Congress this morning, calling for an investigation into what's going on in Manatee County and also in Charlotte and Sarasota counties when it comes to the pop-up vaccine sites. So we could talk about that. Again, if you want to comment, you can call us up, 813-239-9663. And you can also email us here, the address dj@wmnf.org. We talked a little bit with, Daryl Paulson was interviewed by Ernest Hooper a little bit about the CPAC convention that happened over the weekend. The fact checkers were very busy, and the number of falsehoods put out by President Trump alone was huge. Speech that the ex-president gave last night was filled with falsehoods, according to CNN and the AP fact checkers. Just some of the falsehoods. President Trump was wrong about who won the election. He claimed that Democrats lost the White House in his speech last night. Trump also claimed that mail-in ballots were done by dead voters, that he claimed that there were more votes than people in some areas of the country. All this was false. He claimed that there were more votes in Pennsylvania than eligible voters. That was false. He claimed that Joe Biden did not oppose the Keystone Pipeline during the campaign. That was false. He said that Joe Biden had sold out children to the teachers' unions, cruelly keeping children locked in their homes. And Biden, the facts are that Biden has called for the reopening of most schools by his 100th day in office. So the fact checkers were really going to town when it came to the president's ex-president's speech last night. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I was taken by the gold statue of Donald Trump that was set up at the halls at CPAC in Orlando. Many people came to have their picture taken and observe the golden statue of President Trump. And I think there's a Tampa connection to that, and I'm reading here from Slate.com. Golden statue of former President Trump is turned into the talk of the Conservative Political Action Conference taking place in Orlando. CNN, for example, calls the more than 6-foot-tall statue the indisputable star of the conference. The statue has Trump wearing a suit jacket with white shirt and red tie plus American flag shorts. Trump is also wearing sandals and is holding a magic wand. A reference to how former President Barack Obama once said that Trump didn't have a magic wand to bring back manufacturing jobs to the U.S. Going on reading from Slate, he's wearing a business suit because he's a businessman. The red tie represented the Republican Party. The red and white blue shorts represented the fact that he's a patriot, the artist Tommy Zeigan told the New York Post. The sandals is the way Zeigan chose to represent that Trump was in his golden years and could be on the beach if he wanted to be. The artist Zeigan told Politico that the fiberglass statue, though, was made in Mexico over a period of 6 months in the resort town of Rosarito. He then took it to Tampa, where it was painted in chrome, and then got a U-Haul to transport it to CPAC. And Zeigan told the reporters, if someone offered me $100,000, I'd take it. So Zeigan, apparently, who did the gold statue of Donald Trump, has a Tampa connection. The statue that's turning its heads at CPAC is really just an appetizer for the real thing, though. It's the fiberglass mold of the stainless steel sculpture that Zeigan has stored in Tampa, making that statue cost him his life savings of $50,000, he said. He apparently wants to sell that one, the fiberglass one, for more than $1 million. But if he can't sell it, he wants it to go to the Trump Presidential Library. He says it's museum quality, and that's the one I'm eventually hoping to get into the Trump Library, Zeigan told CNN. It's priceless, he says. All right, so I wonder if you saw the golden statue of President Trump made in Mexico out of chrome and then painted gold. What did you think of that statue at the CPAC convention? Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Jeff writes this. There was a poll from The Guardian indicating that Trump is still the candidate of choice for 2024 among Republicans. Yeah, I think the numbers are they took a straw poll at the CPAC convention, and they asked who conservative political action committee members wanted to see run for president in 2024. And I think the surprise was that Trump won only narrowly. According to the straw poll, Trump got 54% of the vote, I believe. And in second place, Florida's Republican governor, Ron DeSantis, 24%. So a lot of people at CPAC wanted somebody other than Donald Trump to run for president in 2024, about 46%, according to the reports that I've read. So, Jeff, thank you for that. I would expect that at CPAC, which is home turf for Donald Trump, that he would he'd get like an 80 or 90% group of people wanting him to run for president in 3 years. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Bill writes this. Regarding falsehoods said at the CPAC convention, Bill writes, not false, Rob. Call them what they are, lies, writes Bill. Bill, thank you for that. And some more emails have come in. Somebody says it's fool's gold at CPAC. James writes this, as bad as he is, I believe that he will win in 2022. And he's talking about Governor DeSantis, because this is Florida and a mini-me of the orange one. James, not a big fan of Governor Ron DeSantis. And again, if you want to comment, call us up, 813-239-9663. I'm still wondering whether or not it was a good political idea to make a golden statue of Donald Trump. Do you think that helped Trump's cause or hurt it? And what kind of message does it send when you send a giant gold-plated statue or gold-painted statue to a convention of conservative people, knowing that there's going to be reporters and lots of cameras taking photos? What message does it send that the leader of your party, the person who really controls the Republican Party right now, is deified in this statue of gold? What message does that send? Looking for your thoughts, 813-239-9663. Harvey writes this: the statue looks like the clown it represents. That's Harvey's opinion. Harvey, thank you for your thoughts. And let's go to Keith in Tampa, who's our first caller. Keith, thanks for calling in. What would you like to comment about?
Well, the statue. As soon as I saw it, all I could think of is the third chapter of Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar puts up a giant golden statue of himself and demands everyone bow to it. And, of course, I'm wondering where in that convention center did they have the fiery furnace in case anyone refused to do so.
So, if the conservatives include a lot of people who read the Bible and understand the warnings from the Bible, including, you know, the prohibition against worshiping the golden calf, you know, what message does the putting the statue there, what message does that send?
I don't know. It's just, it was almost funny in how ironic it was, and so many people claim to be Christians or religious people in any sense. And it's just so, you know, one of the many ways they just blatantly disregard Scripture in their following of Trump.
Yeah, both in the Christian tradition and the Jewish tradition, those references are well known.
Anyway.
All right, Keith, thanks a lot. I'm glad you called.
In a horrible way.
Thanks, Keith. 813-239-9663. And what do you think about the calls for a federal investigation into the way vaccines are being distributed in Manatee County and now in Sarasota County and Charlotte County? That call from our agriculture commissioner. What do you think about that? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Here's an email from Linda. Linda says, Trump thinks he's God. Pictures show Jesus wearing sandals. Trump is not a sandals guy. Connection, he's their golden boy, writes Linda about the statues. And if there's something that you want to comment about that you've heard here so far, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. I did get the Pfizer vaccine the other day, and I had to go to the University Square Mall in Tampa, and I had been there two or three weeks ago as the distribution of the vaccines were being given out to people, and the parking lot was crowded with cars, and they used the old kind of Disney-like S lines, so you go up, you know, 100 yards in one direction, you go down 100 yards in another direction in your car. And as I was there, I had the appointment for 3:30 in the afternoon on a Thursday. Well, I got in line about 10 minutes early, and I thought, well, this will be quick. And I saw I was near the site of the old Penny's at the University Square Mall in Tampa. And there were about 500 cars. We were about eight rows abreast, and a lot of cars. But I thought, oh, this is going to be fine. I'll get my vaccine very quickly. 3:30 in the afternoon, and the line is moving slowly. And they snake us through the parking lot on the ground level, and then they tell us to go up to the top level of the parking lot. And I said, oh, this will be easy. So I'm now in the line for about a half an hour or so. And so I slowly climb the ramps to get to the top level of the parking garage. And then I see there's a house in the distant corner. And I thought, well, that's probably where they're giving the vaccines. And once we snake through here, then the person giving out the vaccines will shoot me in the arm, and then I'll be on my way. And so we snaked all the way up to the roof of the parking lot. Snaked across the roof of the parking lot. Now I've been in the line for at least an hour, maybe more. And then there's no vaccine site at the top of the parking lot. parking garage. I had to then proceed down to the one of the mid-levels of the parking garage. And by then, I'd been in line for about an hour and 45 minutes. And then I'm told to park. So I parked. And then I heard murmuring from other cars that they're out of vaccines. Now, nobody had come up to me yet to give me the vaccine. So I heard this murmuring. And finally, about 15 minutes later, a nice young person comes up and takes down my name and all my information, makes sure I've got an appointment. And then I asked her, are you out of vaccines? She said, yes, we are. We've ordered some more, and they'll be here any minute. And I said, well, do you work for the county or do you work for a private company? She says, oh, I work for a private company. And I noticed that I'm one of the last in line. So I get there at 3:30, and by about 4:15, they must have cut off access to the parking lot. It took me 2 hours in line, and I noticed that there were people. Luckily, my car works, and it's in good running condition. But I noticed that there were people in older cars in this two-hour run. And you know, you've got to have your air conditioning on. It was getting hot on Thursday. And people's cars were overheating, and they were burning out. And some pulled out of line. And I don't know what happened to those people. But I was scheduled for a vaccine for 3:30. It took me till 5:30 to actually get the vaccine. I was lucky. My car was able to get through the line. But there were people whose cars were so ancient and they were overheating because we were going so slow and it was so hot that their cars didn't make it. So I wonder to this day what happened to those folks who weren't able to get through the line. And it was impossible for me to park my car and then walk back and kind of search for these poor people who had pulled out of line and because their cars were not working. Well, now this week, they're moving the vaccine site over to Raymond James Stadium. And I don't know how they're going to handle it, but I can tell you that the way that they're forcing people to sit in their cars, and if you've got an older car, it's overheating, that's the wrong way to do it. And if you make an appointment for 3:30, it shouldn't take 2 hours because if you've got to work, if you got to get back to work, what do you do? So anyway, I hope the folks who run the vaccine program in Tampa fix it, because it's clearly not working, and there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a smarter way. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Ted in Ellenton. Ted, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
Rob?
Yep.
Only in Florida could you have this happen. It's 85 degrees, and you're in a car for 2 hours? How much gas are you consuming over those?
Yeah, and how much toxic fume are you putting out into the atmosphere and getting into everybody else's lungs?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I just saw him. You got to love Mini Trump. He's always making sure his people get everything.
Yeah, I don't know if at those pop-up sites in Manatee County you had to sit in line for 2 hours. And have your car overheat. All right, Ted, thanks a lot. Thank you. And that'll be, some of the reporting I hope gets done. And I'm sure it will be done by people like the reporter Jessica DeLeon, who was on the TV show on Friday. Let's go to TJ in Tampa. TJ, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Rob, great morning. It smells so good checking in with you. A couple of points. Since you was just making that point about the vaccine, why don't they just, We are the home of the golf cart. So why don't you just have everybody park, cut your cars off, use the cart, give out numbers to everybody, and when it's your number, the cart comes, pick you up, get your vaccine, bring you back to your car, next set of numbers. We got four people. We might, we got five carts, four people, three people in each cart. There you go, 15 people at a time. Boom. Bring back their car. Everybody should call them. That solved that problem right there. That sounds very logical.
Yeah, that might be one way to do it. I'm sure there's a lot of ways to do it, a lot of ways to fix a problem, and so that if you've got an older car, you don't have to be penalized because your car is old. And if you're a worker, if you're somebody that works for a living, and you can't take time off, nobody should be forced to wait 4 hours in line for a vaccine or 2 hours in line for a vaccine. TJ, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Let's go to Julio in Tampa. Julio, you're on. What would you like to say?
Thank you. Looking at the statistics that you just mentioned a little ago, that the majority of Republicans really support right now Trump. Well, I don't understand how, after we have a legacy of 500,000 American dead due to the lack of, I don't know what, I don't talk worst here. But anyway, so I was hoping at a certain moment that Trump will decide to create a third party, not to continue staying in the GOP, the great name of the GOP. But it seems that he says no. So I would like if the GOP, changed its name and maybe it should be called the Trump Party or the Evangelical Party, which is the majority of the people who support him, or something else. But definitely, I do believe that we need to forget the achievements of other times of the great old party. I think that's what I wanted to.
Well, Julio, thanks a lot. I think it's really true. I mean, I don't think there's much question that people that are leaders in the Republican Party have really shown their fealty, their loyalty to Donald Trump, as opposed to their loyalty to any sort of principles. So the principles of the party have now become whatever principle Donald Trump has on that day. My guess, yeah. I don't think this is actually a bad thing. Donald Trump attacked Liz Cheney for being a warmonger in his speech last night. Well, if the Republican Party suddenly says we're going to embrace peace and we're going to have a rational military budget, we're not going to waste money on the F-35 anymore. If it does that, then I think that's actually a good thing. We'll see. If they actually follow through.
That's true. Now, unfortunately, our democracy is not functioning very well. I mean, a system in which one third of the people who are eligible don't vote, and another great percentage of the ones who vote go vote with the noses closed. This is too bad. And the reason is because the two parties are now corporate parties. And basically are with those little differences of a guy lying in one side and the other.
All right. Well, Julio, thanks. Thanks for making those points. And we will discuss this more, I promise. Thank you.
Thank you, Julio.
And we heard a lot of that discussion in 2000 during the 2000 presidential election. I would say though that there are people, if you're looking for the diversity in the party, you might look to somebody like AOC and Bernie Sanders who caucuses with the party. There is more diversity and we heard a congressman on Democracy Now! This morning, who is a progressive. So there are lots of progressives in the party. Now the question is, how much power do they have and how much can they steer the party? Let's go to Karen in Seminole. Karen, thank you for calling. What would you like to say? Hi, Karen.
Rob, I'm sorry you had a bad experience in Hillsborough. I can tell you that the Department of Health in Pinellas County has been fantastic running their program. We just had a pop-up, I guess you could call it that, effort in Seminole at our community, and everybody got together, got the names together, and managed to get 300 people vaccinated in our over 55-plus community here. And it was good. I wish in Pinellas they had made it so that you could sign up two people. Like, through the public site, you can sign up four. And so my 85-year-old mother has not gotten her second shot yet, but I'm only 65, and I was able to get mine just because of the weird lottery aspect of
I mean, it was like Hunger Games Senior Edition, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people made that comparison. I felt that way when I was in the line. So if you're not part of the lottery and you're not part of a pop-up, how do you get your vaccine in Pinellas County?
Well, I registered with on the patientportalsl.com, and I didn't, you know, then they contact you. You don't have to sit there and wait.
And where do you go to get your shot?
My shots were down on the 22nd Avenue South and 34th Street location, but my mother's are in on the East Bay location. They repurposed some kind of academy or something on 97th and East Bay.
So they have multiple locations. They haven't taken over the site of a former shopping mall and tried to turn that into a place where they do it. They have multiple locations in Pinellas County.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The one on 34th Street is called the Public Center for Equity Health or something like that. And it looks like it used to be a Kmart or something. And the one on East Bay, it resembles a repurposed mall too. But I apparently it was an educational facility.
Yeah.
But
all right.
But once you get in there, they run it really slick and wonderful. The saddest part of this that bothers me is that there's all these people with masters in public health administration who know how to do these things, but because people didn't want to take responsibility, they dumped it off on the state. Here, you figure it out. And then those guys dumped it off on the counties and said, here, you reinvent the wheel. And I'm sure there's all these educated people with degrees in this that are tearing their hair out.
Yeah, there's got to be a better way, at least in Hillsborough County. I'm glad it works in Pinellas. Karen, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. Good to hear from you. And lots of emails have come in. Lots of people are online. Ronald writes this. I can see it now. DeSantis for president with Tricky Rick Scott as his running mate. The Republican dream team. God help us if that happens. I think both want to be the top dogs. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how much love is lost between Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott. David writes this, the golden statue reminds me of warnings in the Bible about not worshiping false prophets. It reminds me of Trump's newest property, the Trump Lake of Fire Resort, the finest brimstone, believe me, writes David. And then Daniel writes this, in the Bible and the Quran, they mention, do not make false statues of my image, as they will be used to pray to a false god, writes Daniel. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to let's go to Beverly in Largo. Beverly, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Oh, yeah. Hi, Rob. I'm sorry you had that experience with the vaccine. And my sister had the same experience down in South Florida. Rosemary, I think you know her. She's been on your show before. And by the way, she's moving up to the Tampa Bay area.
Yeah, I posted on her Facebook page. Congratulations. Yeah. And I'm glad she's coming back.
I am too. So anyway, she had the same experience as you, and I, like the previous caller, had a good experience in Pinellas County, registered on the portal, and was able to snag a vaccine appointment while I was on there, which I guess was pretty lucky. It was just kind of, you know, luck. Anyway, I got in, and we had ours administered in a recreational complex on Highland Avenue in Pinellas County. And so you just park your car, you get out, you get in the line, which moved really fast, and you went into this building where they gave you the shot. And you waited for 15 minutes to make sure there were no side effects. It was easy. No side effects. I had the Pfizer. No side effects from either dose.
Yeah, I had the Pfizer. No arm pain at all. Well, I wonder. I mean, it sounds like Hillsborough County could learn a lot from what's going on there in Pinellas County, and I'm wondering why our county commissioners aren't screaming about this.
I am too. I am too. I hear the difference, and as soon as I had mine, I texted my best friend, whose mother lives in Hillsborough County, and she was trying to get her an appointment for the vaccine, and I texted her right away, and I said, try to get a location where you go into a building somewhere inside, because I heard the horror stories about, you know, the car line.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, Beverly, thanks a lot. We're out of time, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813 23 888-8-0-0-1 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Sean Canaan is coming up in the next hour with the Midpoint Program, and he's going to talk with an epidemiologist who's concerned about a possible spike in new coronavirus cases. So stick around. It's going to be a good program in the next hour. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Thanks to Frank Knox. He's been our phone producer today. Here's the latest news from NPR.
Live.